Hi, everybody. This is Jack Hubbard, the Chief Experience Officer at St. Meyer and Hubbard, and I am absolutely thrilled today because I got a chance to chat with a living legend. Now, you don't have to believe me, but the National Speakers Association put Shep Hyken in the Hall of Fame for that very reason. This guy is the guru of gurus when it comes to the client experience. He's written 6 best-selling books. Well, that's according to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. And what's really cool is his title. He is the Chief Amazement Officer of Shepherd Presentations. And any of you that have had the great, great occasion to hear Shep speak, it was a privilege for you as well. Shep was talking with me recently about his brand new book. This is amazing. It's called The Convenience Revolution: How to Deliver a Customer Service Experience That Disrupts the Competition and Creates Fierce Loyalty. You will hear 6 different tenets from this amazing book that, if you're listening to it before October 2nd, comes out October 2nd. If you're listening to it after October 2nd, it's out on the newsstands and in the bookstores and on Amazon already. But either way, you need to get this book. I've read it, I've experienced it, and now I had the chance to talk to Shep Hyken about it. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's Shep Hyken.
Well, so thank you for joining us, Shep. This is an amazing, amazing privilege. Your new book is coming out October 2nd. For some people who hear this before that, there's a pre-order, which we'll talk about. And for others who don't pre-order it, it's certainly it is available. Walk us through the book. Tell us about the convenience revolution.
Sure. Well, the convenience revolution, how to disrupt a customer service experience that how to deliver a customer experience that disrupts the competition and creates fierce loyalty. So I wrote this book with the idea that the customer is no longer comparing you to your direct competitor. And I know we have a lot of people in the banking business that are in the financial services industry that are listening to this show. And our customers don't compare us to another bank anymore, or another, you know, advisor, another commercial lender. It doesn't. They're comparing us to the best service that they ever received from anyone. And therefore, their expectation of what you deliver is no longer based on a competitor. It could be based on the guy that just sold a customer a $25 pair of running shoes that were on sale at a department store. He was so knowledgeable, helpful, understood the customer, took the time, et cetera, et cetera. So we need to keep in mind that our people need to be as good as that, whatever that is. And that's anybody that's delivered service. So service is table stakes. The quality of the product is table stakes. You need to have a good product. You need to have good service. So what do you do to make it better? You make it more convenient. Because as soon as you're easier than your competition, even if the competition tries to become as easy as you, you already made it easy for the customer. You're there first. You will own that customer. The convenient experience combined with great service and a great product, it's a triple threat, and it's a slam dunk. So I wrote the book when I realized that so many of these successful companies that I've written about over the years, that's one thing that they did. I mean, look at how Uber disrupted the entire taxi cab industry. They did it because they were more convenient, right?
Well, no doubt. And you know, you talk about banking. And you are the expert. I mean, whenever I see an article about, and or whenever I hear a banker ask about, well, who should I talk to about customer experience, Shep Hyken's name is the only one I can think of.
Well,
but
thank you.
In all of the other books, you've written 7 of these things now. In all of the other books, and not that this one doesn't talk about the customer experience, you really directed at the customer experience. But what was different about this book, and what inspired you to write this beyond what you just said?
Sure. As I was mentioning, companies that I've written about, I said, oh boy, you know, I seem to see these same companies popping up, not just in my books, but in other books. And what is it, even if a company that's a local little company that seems to be outpacing its competitor, what are they doing besides delivering great service? Because everybody else is trying to do it too. And I realize they're more convenient. And so the convenience revolution has 6 areas of convenience. So Before I get into my banking example, I'm going to ask you, and 9 out of 10, if not 99 out of 100 people will give me the same answer. For you, what's the most convenient company that you've ever done business with?
Amazon.
Exactly. And they have nailed all 6 of the categories, and I'll share them with you real briefly. I'll do 6 categories in under 3 minutes, maybe under 2 minutes. But what they've done is they totally disrupted the book industry and now the entire retail industry. And they are so forward thinking. So that you have 6 areas, as I mentioned before. Number one is reducing friction. And while all 6 have reducing friction as a part of what they do, some companies have made this their whole focus, such as Uber. Let's make it easier to get a transportation from wherever you are. If you, like where I live, you have to call for a taxi cab. With Uber, you open up the app, you can see how far away he is or she is. You can see the car driving towards you. You've already put in where you're going. You know what it's going to cost. You don't even have to pay for it when you leave. It's automatically taken care of, completely disrupting the industry. That's reducing friction. A self-service experience, even in the banking industry, to be able to call up, get your balance real fast, go online, transfer money. That's a self-service before you had to go in and take care of it. You've got technology that can support a more convenient solution. A subscription model, which a lot of companies don't realize that they're capable of delivering ongoing services for an ongoing fee or even an annual fee. If they can figure out that and crack the code on that, I think it's a very convenient model. Netflix is the main case study of a subscription service. And by the way, each of these areas of convenience have 5 case studies underneath them. But Netflix, you pay a subscription, you get streaming services. By the way, Blockbuster was a subscription service as well. You have the option. You can go in and rent, buy the video, or pay a fee. But Netflix came along and said, hey, don't even go to the store anymore. We'll just mail them to you. And now you just stream it. And it's amazing. I believe Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix for a mere $6 million. That Netflix is worth billions of dollars. Anyway, that's subscription. Number 5 is delivery. Makes sense. Somebody can deliver something to you. And number 6 is access. Are you accessible to your customers? And by the way, my number 1 lead case study for access is Huntington Bank. They recognized that the average customer wanted to bank outside of traditional banking hours, or they had to hurry up at lunch and go to lunch and stand in line because it was so busy, but they hardly ever were able to get off work and go to the bank and get there before it closed. Huntington Bank extended their hours to later, and they also opened on the weekends. Other banks are following suit. That's not a big deal, you would think, but you know what? I know that my bank that I do banking with, by the way, I chose them because they're so convenient. They're accessible because they're less than 200 yards from the outside of my front door of my office building. Very convenient. It would be more convenient if on a Saturday I could go by that branch and they would be open and I can do a transaction. But there is the ATM machine, right? ATM is a convenience factor. So I can go on about the way banks are being convenient, but I think that the bank that becomes most convenient is the one that wins. There's a bank. Are you familiar with Evergreen?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Totally online. They don't have a physical branch. That is, to me, a disruptor. And, you know, some people are very uncomfortable with that, but they're getting more and more comfortable with doing everything. I mean, how often do we really have to go to the bank? When we take a picture of a check and use that as a way to deposit the check, we can, you know, obviously go to an ATM and pull money out if we need cash. But I mean, we can do banking with a bank now that no longer has a physical location. The only way they're going to win is through being more convenient.
So I'm really interested in all of these, certainly, but a number of them. And you tell a couple of great stories in the book. One of them is reduced friction. And one of our challenges in banking is because of the legislation impedes us and the policies. What we've seen studies from some very reputable research companies in banking that say the number one reason that people bank with you is easy to buy from. Now, Huntington has made it easy for you to buy from them. So I'm curious, how does banking reduce friction in a policy and regulated world?
Right. You've got to be within compliance. And the way to do it is, so number one is help and support. Okay. So walk me through the forms I've got to fill out. make me understand, educate me as to why this is. I need to know that this isn't about your bank. This is about the you know, government regulation. And by government regulation does create friction. And it's the relationship that a banker might have with their customer that might allow that friction to be reduced. Imagine going in and having the form practically filled out for you, you know, when you come in, because the banker has made it a point to know enough about that customer that they can get to a point where let's cut this friction down as much as we can. And the support that that banker gives the customer is, you know, it's applauded by that customer. And the, you know, the gift the customer gives back is more business, referrals, reputation, you know, talking about how easy it is to do business with them. You know, just a simple idea that, hey, if I've got to do business with somebody, why can't they come to me? You know, I've had the bank that I do business with, and I'm on their advisory board. I love it that when I first started doing business with them and they were really getting me into the system, they sent somebody to my office. And yeah, a lot of forms to fill out, investment forms, you know, the way, you know, I move money from one account to the other, there's friction there because, you know, hey, we're just, as a bank, it's not our policy, it's the regulation. We aren't allowed to do certain things that you want to do. We just have to go around and take extra steps to do them.
Well, and you talked about, you just mentioned the banker coming to your office, which gets me to delivery. You tell a great story about how you had purchased cars for 20 yes. years from this one dealer, and you bought a car farther away, and we don't think, well, it's farther away, it's inconvenient. Tell that story, it's fascinating.
Sure, so I had been doing business with a company for, actually I've tried to figure out, but it's at least 22 years, I think it's closer to 27. And I had bought my cars from them. One day, my wife and I are out, and she goes, you've got to see this new car. By the way, I was getting ready to buy a new car. And so we drove by a dealership, and she goes, there it is. It's in the window. So we stopped. We went in and looked at it. I didn't even want to test drive it because I said to the guy, hey, if I like it, I'm not going to buy it from you. You're too far. You're like 12 miles away. Now, 12 miles doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, if you got to bring your car in the morning and it's traffic, that 12 miles is 45 minutes there, 45 minutes back. Then I got to go pick it up later. I'm not doing that. The other dealership, the one that I've been doing business with for all those years, if they didn't have a loaner for me, they were still less than a mile from my office. I could drop the car off and walk in 10, 15 minutes. I could be at my office. So this guy says to me, if you want to buy this car, take a look. Do you see a waiting room anywhere? And I looked around and there wasn't one. He says, we have one. It's behind that wall. And it's very small because it's seldom used, because if you buy a car from me, we will deliver the car. Every time you need service, we'll pick your car up. We'll drop it off. The next time you come in will be to buy another car. And I went, wow, what's that going to cost me? And basically it was competitive with the price. I even went and shopped it to the original dealership. And the other dealer, by the way, gave him the opportunity to match the offer, and that other dealer wouldn't do it. Bottom line is, I bought the car from this company. I'm now on my third car with them.
Interesting. Well, the other thing you talk about in the book too is technology, which is omnipresent, certainly. I guess my question, and from a banking perspective, so nobody needs to go to the branch anymore. I mean, my kids are younger and they don't ever go to the bank. So right. the branches, just where are the people? And it's all based on technology. But here's the question. You have been so strong on the customer experience. And part of that experience is voice-to-voice, face-to-face, conversations, et cetera. Now we've got technology. What are some really good companies that have blended technology, the customer experience, and great customer conversations into one?
Sure. And I'll give you a story that's in the book. Delta Airlines was an example I used. They were the first ones to do online, at least from the history that I've been able to research, the online purchase, the online check-in. So one day a friend of mine says to me, I just had the best experience on Delta Airlines. I bought a ticket. I checked in. I didn't have to deal with one Delta Airlines employee until I actually got to the plane. And I thought for a moment that he was disrespecting the Delta Airlines people because they're very nice people. And he says, oh, no. I like them. I'm just saying they created the system that's so easy. Once you learn it, and by the way, it took a while. the airlines had to teach their passengers to use online purchase and online check-in. They did it by offering incentives. Get an extra 1,000 miles if you check in online or if you buy your ticket online. People said, I'll learn. And it becomes it's a very intuitive process. When you get on the website, you kind of know what to do, look up your flight, find the one you want, that kind of thing. But that was a great experience that the guy had. So here's my point. The greatest technology in the world, as long as it's working, creates a great experience. But when it isn't working, you better have a good human backup. And you know what, with Delta Airlines or any airlines, you could always pick up the phone or you can go to the courtesy counter. And if there's a long line, you've now created friction that's going to upset the customer. And but if you're really good, if you're any type of, if you're in the banking business, if I am trying to transfer money from one account to the next and I'm doing it online or I'm trying to pay my bills online and I have a problem, I need to be able to pick up the phone and I don't want to be put on hold for an hour and a half or for 10 minutes or for even 5 minutes. I need to instantly connect with a human that's going to help me and get me where I'm going. And by the way, the best systems will allow whoever that service rep is, once I'm verified. And by the way, great ways to verify. Here's a convenient way to get verified. Voice recognition systems. Here's what's interesting. A good voice recognition system today, and there's not that many of them, and they're expensive, so you don't see a lot, but it's happening a lot in the financial services industry. Within 10 words, my voice can be authenticated. Now, it will never mistake. It won't make the mistake of letting somebody come in and mimic my voice. It might, because I may have a cold or there might be noise in the background, force me to another level of authentication. But imagine being able to call up and the customer support agent at the bank saying, so, Mr. Hyken, where are you calling from today? I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri, and I've got a question about transferring some money. I'm having some issues. Well, before I even finish half of that sentence, I'm verified as me because of my voice print. I don't have to give you my social security number, my mother's maiden name, the name of my 17th child, or whatever it is. So it just made it easier. And then if that person can take a look, oh, I can see, yes, you're online and I can see where the problem is. Let me take care of that. I no longer even have to tell you the story because you're able to get into my account and see exactly where I am and where my problem is. That's technology working at its best. Great tech supported by great people. Done.
Oh, and that leads me to my next question. One of the things I loved about this book is a phrase that is so critical, I think, in anything, and that is intentionally convenient. So as I think about that, and when you talk about people, the thing that really gets me is, how do I create a culture of convenience? What are some things that some of the companies you did research on or your case studies, what about their culture and how does this whole convenience revolution emanate and flow through the entire culture?
So it's like customer services. First of all, you have to decide that you want to do it and you have to decide you want to be that company that wants to deliver a great customer experience. But from the technical aspect of creating convenience, it's very simple. And culturally, Let me address that. First of all, leadership has to decide they want it, and they have to define what they want their customer experience or customer service vision to be. Then it needs to be communicated, trained. Everybody needs to be trained to it. By the way, everybody. That means people who never see the customer are going to be trained, but they're maybe not trained the same way as somebody on the front line. So you train people. Number four, the fourth step is your leadership will actually role model, and you can't ask people to do something and then act a different way. Number five, leadership keeps it in alignment. If somebody's out of alignment with the customer experience vision, we need to get them back in. And number six, you celebrate it when it works. So that's an overall scheme of how you create the culture. But how do you create convenience? Well, it's simple. You have to do a very careful journey map, a top line journey map to start with. And top line, I mean all the touch points that a customer has at the front line with your company. And that doesn't mean just people. It could be on the web. It could be how easy it is to read a statement. You know, what are you doing and looking at every one of the interactions that customer has with any aspect of your company or your organization, and then look at every point and say, is this as easy as it could possibly be? Is there a way to make it more convenient? Let's not look at just our competitors, but let's look at other companies who have similar touch points. Are they doing something that we're not? And you start looking at all those touch points and you start eliminating friction and making it easier and reducing, you know, time with the process. So that's the start. Then you look internally and you say, what can I do internally to create a more convenient situation for our internal people? I'll give you an example in the customer support world. A lot of times companies will put software programs and ask their agents to relearn a very complicated software program that's really great for the customer, but miserable for the agent. And even if they perfect it, it's still cumbersome. And companies need to recognize, for you to be convenient to your customer, you've got to be convenient to your employees as well. For you to give a great service experience to your customers, it starts on the inside with employees. So what's happening on the inside is felt on the outside.
Okay, so two more questions. You're busy and you got to run, but two more questions.
Well, I love the 10 minutes with Shep.
It's terrific.
I'm totally cool with that. I love it.
all of these things really speak to certainly any human being, but there are clearly age groups that are more adept at this. I mean, I've seen studies where people would rather have their cell phone versus their car, younger people. What have you found in your studies in terms of more veteran people, older people, that aging generation? How have they adapted to this? And how have millennials adapted to the other side, which is being able to talk to human beings? What have you found in your studies there?
So great question. And there's no doubt that an older generation, the first thing they do is pick up the phone. A younger generation, the first thing they do is they touch a button on their phone, not the keypad. It's, open up an app or go online and see if I can get the information quicker. So, or faster, doing it on my own. There's no doubt that millennial versus baby boomer. I mean, you can go on and on with all the generational differences. The best companies have recognized, you know what, we're not going to change some people, some of our customers, so let's make sure we're available for them. The second piece of it is we can train our customers, just like the airlines trained everybody, not everybody, but almost everybody, to buy their ticket online, to check in online and save themselves time. They did a phenomenal job. It took several years. It wasn't done overnight. Again, I mentioned as earlier in our conversation, I'll get 1,000 extra points if I check in online. And all of a sudden I learned, this is really easy, much easier to do than I thought it was. So we've got to train our customers. And by the way, get this, this is a cool thing. I always talk about the blend between digital technology and the human factor, which we talked about a little bit earlier. The human backs up the digital, but digital can back up the human. It doesn't matter how old the person is. If I've got somebody on the phone and they're asking me about some complicated process, and I have a video that will show them how to fill out the form, or I could direct them to a point on the website that will walk them through step by step, that might be a better solution than me hanging out on the phone talking to them. And so I encourage companies to look to go the other direction too. Can we move people from in-person to digital? By the way, doing it in such a way that doesn't erode the relationship. You have to be careful and train your people to properly move your customer away from doing business with them, people to people. But to your original point, we all know what the studies are. So the question is, who is your customer and the buckets that you have them in? If you deal primarily with an older group, you may have to say, we're going to have to spend a little bit more time and a little bit more effort on traditional service experience as we try to move them and train them toward the conventional, today's conventional way, which is, using some technology. By the way, no matter who your customer is, the moment there's friction technology-wise, as I mentioned earlier, you got to have the human backup.
For sure. Last question for you. You've written 7 books. What was your first book?
The first book was called Moments of Magic. Be a star with your customers and keep them forever. And it was about managing that moment of truth. Anytime the customer comes into contact with any aspect of your organization, they will form an impression. That comes from Jan Carlson. And I say, he said the moments of truth could be good and bad. And I say they could be good, bad, or they can be indifferent or satisfactory or average. I named the bad ones moments of misery, the mediocre or average ones moments of mediocrity. And then there's the moment of magic, anything that's better than average. By the way, on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being excellent, 1 being poor, average is 3. If you want to get a 5, just be a 4 all of the time. It's that consistent and predictable above average experience. If you're a 4 sometimes and a 3, sometimes you're going to get a 4.
That's interesting. And when was that written, Shep? When did you write it?
Wow, that was written I wrote it in 1989 was the first edition, and 1991 came out with the second one, and I've redone it just a few years ago. If you'd read it 5 years ago, you would say, yeah, you should use a fax machine to get things to your customers quickly.
Interesting.
And there's now something called email. Check my email out. It's like a 7-digit number at CompuServe.com. So.
Well, it's interesting. And the reason I asked the question is because there are a lot of folks on this program today who are listening, who have this symphony inside of them in terms of a book. What advice would you give them? I mean, when you started your first book, how did this all happen? Did you just sit down and write? Did you do research? And what advice would you give to young people or older people who have never written a book but want to try it?
Sure. Well, today it's easier than ever to write a book. Back when I wrote a book, I actually took my speech. I started out and still am. I keynote speak all over the world at events for banks and virtually any type of company. But I took my speech and I basically transcribed it. And that was the first 20 pages of my book. And I blew out all the examples in much more detail. But today, if you have something you want to write about, just start writing. There's lots of tutorials. You can go on YouTube and get free information on how to write the book. Once you have the manuscript finished and it's clean, Amazon has the most amazing program. It's called CreateSpace. And you can upload the manuscript and you can create a cover for it. And before you know it, literally in not even, you know, hours, but in sometimes minutes, if you know what you're doing, you now have a book that you can sell to the world. And if you've got something to share with the world, by all means, put it in a book form and get it out there. And by the way, you can print the book. They will send you on demand. You don't have to keep an inventory. So if you want to buy 50 books and give them to your friends, that's fine. If you don't want to have any inventory, every time somebody buys one, it's print on demand. And if you decide you want to use the book as part of your marketing materials, the book is the best business card that you can give somebody. It tells people exactly who you are and what you believe in and anything you want them to know.
Well, speaking of the book, the new one comes out October 2nd, The Convenience Revolution. 7-time best-selling author, world-class speaker, and best-in-class guy. Thanks, Shep. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
The Convenience Revolution, How to Deliver a Customer Service Experience That Disrupts the Competition and Creates Fierce Loyalty, is out October 2nd. But if you want to pre-order the book, you can go to beconvenient.com, and you'll also not only get the book, the hardcover, but you'll get the ebook immediately, so you'll get a chance to hear all of these wonderful things that Shep Hyken has talked about. If you ever want to book Shep for a presentation, you can go to Hyken.com. Not only is Shep great at customer experience, but wait till you experience the folks inside his office. They are absolutely terrific. Thank you, Shep. Thanks for sharing your expertise with us around the customer experience. All the best for your soon-to-be 7th best-selling book. This is Jack Hubbard. Look for us on the next 10 Minutes With, and make this and every week a great client week.